When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Stochastic.com MLB strategy show. Nine game action Friday night. Bunch of 640 type games. So 15 games in total, only nine games on the night slate. That's a good thing. Yeah, I can do without these 13, 14 gamers on a Friday. I'm Dave Locker. With me, Matt Bellman. Just ran into I was going to say emergency, but it sounds more like this. This happens more often than not.
Yeah, unfortunately, it is kind of a common occurrence where my dog gets into something, whatever that something might be, and end up giving her a little peroxide to throw it up. I always used to like wonder why people would just move up and away from their families and like never to be heard from again. I get it now. I totally get it.
Yeah, I just moved down into the basement. That's mm-hmm. what I did. And life is good. Hey, happy to have you guys with us. If you don't mind, take one single second before we get started here. Atone for your sins on a Friday morning. Heading into the weekend, hit that thumbs up, subscribe to the channel, and leave a comment down below if you're listening or watching after the fact. It's greatly appreciated. It goes a long way. And if you want to listen in podcast form, you can do so. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff. You don't have YouTube Premium, but you want to close your phone. Maybe you're mowing the lawn. You're doing yard work. Who knows? Maybe you're folding a ton of your kids' laundry. I generally don't have to do that. But once in a while, when I do, I just throw the AirPods in, Matt, and I let it rip. Throwing the AirPods in, listen to a podcast, listen to a show, makes everything about life just easier. You know what I mean?
Yeah, especially when you're doing chores like that. It just makes the time go.
The problem is, YouTube, if I start watching certain things, I heavily recommend them in my algo until I stop doing that. So it's like, you know, not recently, I've always been very fascinated by tornadoes. Okay. You go and look at some of these tornadoes that just happened, like Iowa and such, nothing like you've ever seen before. Go watch them. Look these up. I'm telling you guys, these are freaks of nature type tornadoes. Never seen anything like it. So I'm watching these. I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. Go on YouTube the next day. Like the only thing I'm getting recommended is tornado videos. Or how about this? DUI videos, pretty interesting stuff. Body cam footage, people trying to do the field sobriety test, Matt, and just all over the place, getting belligerent, good stuff. Don't watch more than two of those because that's all they're going to recommend you. Just a word for the wise.
My whole YouTube algo is that. I mean, it's that and prison videos, I feel like. And yeah, I like those. Yeah, so like you said, just know that if you start really getting into them, they'll just keep coming up. And it's funny, I know that we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Baby reindeer, it just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. It is the weirdest show I've ever seen, no doubt.
I don't think I can do it, I'll be honest.
It's so bizarre.
I don't think I can do it. Ben told me, he goes, you have to just watch the first two episodes. He goes, I stopped watching after the second episode, but you need to watch it just to see how bizarre this show is. So maybe I'll watch the first two episodes and go from there. But a lot of baseball to talk about. Let's do it. Good pitching today, which is funny because when you look at the pitching options, like all of the good ones, I won't say all of them, but most of them, are in that like 8 and 9K range, right? Tanner Houck against Minnesota. He's had a few phenomenal games from a strikeout, just phenomenal in general. Sonny Gray's been lights out this season. He's your like high priced guy. He's got the White Sox. Tanner Bibee has the Angels, who are without Mike Trout, clearly no longer have Shohei Ohtani. That offense is completely stagnant right now. Who else? Oh, what about Blanco too against Seattle? Great strikeout matchup. We're just scratching the surface, man. And that doesn't even include Marcus Stroman, who in large part, good pitcher. The walks have really plagued him this year though. And it's limited his ability to get deep into games, which we've seen him do so well over the years. A lot of pitching to talk about today.
We had that one really deep pitching slate last week where I stupidly said it was like a 6.5 and then changed to a 9. This might be the deepest pitching slate we've had all year. Not necessarily with the top end arms, but there's really good options across every price point, guys in good matchups. Ownership is pretty spread out, and I get it because there's so many good choices.
They really are. Greg and I were doing a show the other day, and Jordan, what did we have? Like 4 people in chat that were mailmen doing their routes that day? Yeah, well, Andy in chat, I mean, if he's not a mailman, that would be a real disappointment. With a last name like that. Gotta be. I mean, if you don't take that up as a profession early in life and strive for something there, you've done it wrong, Andy. Anyway, let's do it, man. So I honestly don't even know where to start because there are so many. Like, I think you have to start with Sonny Gray and then work your way down, right? He's going up against the White Sox. On some books, you're looking at like a 2.9, sorry, implied total here in St. Louis, perfectly good park, home start. 22% top two pitcher probability on DraftKings. On FanDuel, Sonny Gray at 8%, obviously a one-pitcher site, but highest ownership at 18%. He's 11,500 on FanDuel, though, so a little bit different from site to site. You're just not going to get away from how good this matchup is.
Yeah, I don't think he's like a must-play on this slate because of the other options, but I do think he's the clear starting point. He's been phenomenal this season. Only made 4 starts because he got a little bit dinged up during spring training, averaging over 27 fantasy points per game. And some good spots in there, but also some tougher spots. Started out the season with a really nice outing against Philly, even though his workload was really watched. So now that we're finally getting like fully stretched out Sonny Gray, I don't really think it's a question that he's the top arm on the slate. I mentioned how ownership is spread out. He's the guy getting the most love, as I would expect. I mean, he's the most expensive guy, but he's not that expensive. The spot is pristine, obviously, against the White Sox at home. Now, the White Sox have been more frisky recently. Certainly, they looked like a dead man walking for the first couple weeks of the season. Getting Tommy Pham, getting a little bit life in that offense has made them play a little bit better. It's still a really shitty offense, and Sonny Gray is really good. So again, I don't think he's a you have to lock him in type of play here. He's the top option, and if you have enough money for it, I don't even think it's close.
Agreed. So he's the top option for sure. I don't really think anyone's going to disagree with that, and the tools certainly don't disagree with that. The thing that stands out to me more than anything is the fact that while he's the top option, you have 4 guys in this 8K. This might be the deepest, unless you're talking about like a 13, 14 game slate, might be the deepest mid-range pitching we've had this season when you factor in talent and matchups, right? Like,
yeah.
Yes, Sonny Gray is great. Tanner Houck has Minnesota. You know that team strikes out at an alarming rate, okay? Can they tune him up? Sure. Minnesota still has some power. It's objectively a high upside matchup. There's no denying that. And then, like, look, they still have a few of their top hitters on the IR or not expected to play today. And then let me take it a step further. Tanner Bibee against the Angels. That's another spot. Angels sub-4 implied total. That offense stinks right now. Blanco against Seattle. I know I opened the show with this, but there's another spot. Like, Seattle could come out there and strike out 10 times in six innings. So this is a really deep 8K range today.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this might be the deepest 8K range we've seen in quite some time. And yeah, you're right. It does make it so Sonny Gray is, I don't want to say he's just another guy because he's the top option, but that's why he's not a must play. That said, to your point about like Minnesota could touch up Hauk and Seattle could touch up Blanco, I think that's the reason why Sonny Gray stands out, because while any pitcher can get touched up, it's baseball, I think he's the safest guy on the slate.
The thing with Stroman, we can dig into this a little bit, and Michael in chat was saying he was going to Stroman. Hey, I wouldn't blame you. But there are, I don't even know if I want to say there's red flags with Stroman, but there's definitely some things that stand out to me. Whereas like, you know, Tanner Houck at Bybee and Blanco, you look at them and Bieber, obviously, there's nothing where you go, huh, that doesn't seem good. You know, they all have that strikeout upside where someone like Stroman relies on ground balls, relies on pitching deep into games, limiting base runners, but he's still getting 58% ground balls. That's, you know, that's what you want to see from him. That's important because that's how he's efficient. What about the fact though, that he's walking batters at an 11% clip? Now, it's not crazy high. It's not like Joe Boyle walk rates, but 12% K minus BB rate for Stroman this year. He has multiple four walk games already. What do you make of that?
Stroman's probably the one guy in this range I won't get to. Now, our tools may say that I'm off there. He is second overall in the top pitcher tool. I just can't imagine playing Stroman at 8,800, even in a good matchup against Detroit, over Bybee in an even better spot. Hauk in this really high upside spot, even Blanco. I think Stroman's on the outside looking in for me.
You know, the problem with Stroman, we had Edward Cabrera yesterday. You and I were talking throughout the game. I had essentially like 100%, got bailed out by those Nathan Eovaldi pairings with him to only lose a little bit. But Cabrera he struck five straight out after giving up that three-run homer. And then it just unraveled. Like innings three and four, he just cruised. He was at like 72 pitches or something. You go, all right, you're getting another frame, maybe two. He doesn't get another out. But at least the nine strikeouts put you in a decent enough spot. Now, Stroman does have a nine strikeout game, a seven and a six this season. So that's good. Do you put him below Hauk, Bybee, and Blanco, though? I mean, it sounds like you're saying yes.
I do. I think Blanco's the one guy where I really see both sides of it as far as Blanco goes. He's got a ton of upside in this spot, and he's been really good. A lot of the underlying numbers say that regression is coming for him. So I think you could make the case for the Seattle stack. But just as far as upside goes, yeah, I think that he's got higher upside than Stroman just because of the matchup and because he's a little bit cheaper and because we know Stroman's track record.
It does feel like one of these spots, though, I must say, where I don't know how cheap you want to go on this slate. You know, the answer may lie somewhere in the middle in that 8K range, but I mean, Brad Keller, Michael Lorenzen, Jose Soriano, Gavin Stone against Atlanta. Brady Singer's not cheap. He's 9,100. Reese Olson, dude, Ryan Weathers is 6K, so there's that, right? Like, Ryan Weathers is 6K, he's pulling 8%, 9% ownership, 8% top two pitcher on this slate. Kirby's 7,800 against Houston. But you look at some of these really cheap options. Chris Paddock against Boston, he's pulling 19% right now. JP Sears against Miami is 15%. How comfortable are you going down into this 6K range?
Not comfortable at all. Probably least comfortable with Paddock here. I know his top two pitcher percentage isn't that low. He's kind of ranked in the middle. Ownership is there, though. I don't love the spot. We'll see what kind of Boston lineup we get. Sears and Weathers, though. Again, to answer your question, I don't feel comfortable about them at all. I love this ballpark. I love the matchup for both of them. They're the two cheapest pitchers on the slate. If I'm going down, I think I'd go all the way down to Sears and or Weathers. I certainly don't like them as much as the top guys, but they're in play for me because of their matchups and their price points.
If Weathers is really going to be getting half the ownership of Chris Paddock, it feels like a no-brainer.
It does. Paddock's been better. I lived through the Ryan Weathers experience last start. He was really good in the first inning, and then it all came falling apart for him, which could easily happen again. He's not a great pitcher. He's been pretty good this year. He came up with decent pedigree. Again, I think it's really risky, but for a starter who stretched out in a good matchup in a great park, I think both those guys are just a little too cheap.
Has Paddock been better? I mean, he had one really good start. He had one really, really strong start against the White Sox. I loved him in that spot for what it's worth. I'm not afraid to go to pitchers like this, and he was more expensive than he is now. He's cheap. But this matchup isn't nearly as appealing. I mean, it's not even remotely as close to appealing. White Sox, and this is Boston? I don't know, yeah, man.
I don't know why I was under the impression that Paddock had pitched well his last start. He didn't. So he
only
has
one
good
start.
I know we've talked about Paddock a little bit, and that I remember you saying that maybe he's not as bad going forward. We've seen him pitch well in the past, but I'm with you. Like, why are we picking on Boston here in a much better hitter's park with a similar pitcher as guys who are in Oakland against much worse offenses? I think we see this eye to eye.
Yeah. What I said about Paddock was, I didn't say that he was good or not bad. What I said is he's not bad enough to where we should be fading him against teams like the White Sox. Right?
Totally
like,
fair.
He's the type of guy that I have no problem running out there in really good spots. But I mean, generally speaking, the upside from a strikeout perspective is very limited. Like, you know, 3 of 5 games, he has 2 strikeouts. He had 5 against the Dodgers, but it hasn't been there at all.
I'm actually going to go back when you kind of said, has he? Weathers has been just as good as Pat this year, if not slightly better. So, yeah.
Just Sears, as bad, I guess you could say.
Yeah, just as bad, maybe, whatever your verbiage is. I feel similarly about Sears, too. Like, I don't think these guys are good, but I don't think they're gas cans, and they're facing Oakland and Miami. Like, I don't really get the Paddock ownership at all.
What are the, okay, so Oakland has a 4.1 total. And
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
What's the total? 4.3 for Boston. Should pull up some weather here too, see what we're looking at. Any bad weather spots today? Looks
Doesn't
pretty
look like
good.
It.
Looks like Cleveland Angels could have something, but nothing significant. That's an early game. That's an early game. Another early game. Nah, it looks like we're pretty much good. Any warm weather spots? Winds blowing out. Let's see. No, everything's pretty much. Well, wind's blowing out 9 miles per hour to left field in this Twins game with Paddock. not really worried about that at all. Same with Oakland, 9 miles out to right center. Can't imagine you have any concerns about that type of weather.
Nah, not even a little bit.
But, like, okay, I ran the Sims too. Jordan, I assume you did as well. Yeah, it's already up there. Can you go to exposures and go to pitchers real quick? We are getting Paddock right now. That's scary.
Yeah, I mean, he's high in the top pitcher tool, so I'm not completely surprised by that.
I think some of this could change throughout the day as well. We'll see. Stroman, Gray, Bybee, Hout. All right, so one thing we're seeing, like yesterday where Cabrera was just getting, you were just going to get a ton of him and then like scatter shots everywhere else of guys. This is pretty spread out at the top of pitching. 37% Stroman, 35 Paddock. I see, like, personally, I'd probably see if I could get a little bit more Weathers, at least even that out a little bit. I don't think I need to be 20% above the field on Paddock. I don't think it'll end that way. 35% Gray, Matt, Tanner Bibee, 32%, 16% Tanner Houck. So, I mean, really all of those 8K guys, except for, no, are we missing an 8K guy there? Oh, Blanco. Scroll down. Are we getting any Blanco, Jordan? Only 10% and 9% Weathers. All right. Go to stacks. I mean, that's a lot of Sonny Gray, but also a lot of 8K and cheaper pitchers. So I assume we're getting some expensive stuff. San Diego, Kansas City, Texas. Oh, there you go. St. Louis, Matt. St. Louis, Cleveland, and San Diego. The three highest exposed five-man stacks on this slate.
Yeah, it doesn't really look like there's any one stack that's like supreme over the others. There's no team in cores. There's a bunch of not great pitchers on this slate, but there aren't many like just true gas cans. I could see one of those teams being the top team on the slate. I personally like Atlanta more than all of them, but they're much harder to get to.
You know, the other day you and I were doing this, I think it was what, Tuesday maybe. And we had talked about Cole Reagans and how like sometimes it makes sense just to play a guy that's really talented, even if he's not in a great spot. He left a couple outs into the seventh, would have kept going, but had just an excellent start. I think, what was it, like 6 2/3, 1 run and 9 strikeouts or something like that. You know, just a really good game. So
I know where you're going with this, I think.
George Kirby?
I knew it. Yeah. Yep.
George Kirby's legitimately good. He's getting 9% ownership in the top pitchers tool. He is positively leveraged, not by a ton, but he is. It's a great rotation they have for Seattle. This guy is just fantastic. I mean, he went out 7-2 hit, scoreless 12K innings last start against Arizona, and that's not exactly the easiest matchup. Now, I'm not saying Houston is either, despite how shitty they've started the season, but he's just really good. I mean, the start before that was in Coors Field. He went 5 scoreless with 7 Ks, didn't even get the win. Cincinnati, 5 2 runs, 6 strikeouts. Kirby had a rough start in his second and third starts to begin the season, but he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, and he's only getting better because he's flashing more upside and he's getting more swing and miss stuff than he has before.
Yeah, hate the matchup, but love Kirby as a pitcher. His average price tag this year is $9,200. So
yeah, wow.
You're clearly getting a big discount on him, and I get it. I don't love the matchup. Clearly, it's Houston. Houston's been pretty hit or miss this year. I think that he's definitely viable in tournaments. Like, I don't want to say I love him just because of the spot, but price tag's too cheap. Wouldn't have a problem at all playing him.
His swinging strike rate's up to 12%. He's sitting on a 28% strikeout rate. His walk rate, this is why you have to love a guy like George Kirby if he can start getting strikeouts. Like, legit Cy Young pitcher right here. 3% walk rate and 0.5 home runs per nine. I mean, he's phenomenal. So it really is a matter of like, do you think this is at 7,800 is worth it in this matchup? I think you can make an argument there's something here. And I know Houston doesn't strike out a lot. That is the problem. They strike out at a league low clip against righties. That's always going to be the issue, even when they're not hitting. But 7,800, pretty crazy number. And for what it's worth, that's just... Toronto, I think, was striking out at the lowest clip against lefties when they went up against Reagans.
Yeah, same exact price as Reagans that day. Now, I know Reagans has reverse split, so, you know, for take that for whatever it's worth. But a lot of righties in this Houston lineup for Kirby. So I just think when you look at talent v. price on this slate, he's definitely the guy that stands out the most there.
Agreed. Maybe the only question then is, because he's so closely priced to Blanco,
he might be the best pitcher on the slate. Like, literally, might be the best pitcher on the slate.
Who, Kirby?
Yeah.
Yeah, he might be. He might be. The problem is, like, Bybee has the Angels. Hauk has the Twins. Blanco right. has Seattle. And Stroman has Detroit. Gray has the White Sox. So I guess the question is the leverage necessary when these guys are getting ownership, but none of them are at like 40%?
I don't think it's like necessary, but just talking about this has me liking Kirby more and more because, yeah, the spot's not good, but we just said he's right up there as one of the top pitchers, if not the top pitcher on the slate. And it's not like the spot is bad and he's 9K. He's 1,300 cheaper than his average tag this year. So that in itself, like, I like playing pitchers like this that are really talented in tougher spots, priced down, and still aren't getting ownership. Yeah, I'm liking Kirby more and more here.
We've already talked about a ton of pitchers. Somehow, because of how deep this is, we haven't talked about Dylan Cease yet. And, you know, understandably, it's not the best matchup. You've also got him kind of bookended by guys like Sonny Gray above him, and then all of those 8K guys beneath him. Feels like he's slightly in no man's land here.
Yeah, it's really hard to get to Cease here. Priced up, brutal spot against Arizona. I could see playing him on kind of the same thing as Kirby. It's just a talent play, but I'd rather play Kirby. I think Kirby and Cease are similarly talented. I probably like the matchup slightly more for Cease, but very similar. Yeah, Cease just is kind of in no man's land, as I think you said.
Crazy, though. Arizona, in over 800 plate appearances this year, bottom five WRC plus and weighted on base average against righties. I don't think it continues, but and they don't strike out a lot. They walk at a high clip. I think they're walking at the second or third highest clip against righties in the league. But, man, they have not been that good against righties this season.
Yeah, that's really surprising to hear. I think a big part of that is the lack of emergence of Corbin Carroll this year. I think he's dealing with some shoulder problems, moved down in the lineup. I think that, yeah, when you think about this offense, you know that they've got upside. They've got multiple games this year with like 15-plus runs, but I guess when you really take a deeper dive into it, they're not as consistent or as good, quite frankly, as they were last year.
I'm not terribly surprised by that either.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they had career years from a bunch of guys last year. I still think this offense is good. Like, I'm not going out of my way to pick on Arizona hardly ever just because they've got a ton of pedigree throughout their lineup, really good hitters, still very early in the season. But maybe I'm giving them a little bit too much credit and Cease should be looked at a little more. Ultimately, though, why am I playing Cease against Arizona at a higher price tag than a Bybee against the Angels, Hauk against Minnesota, you know, Gray against the White Sox, I like much more, and they're in the same pricing tier. I think it's just a price thing for me here.
I agree. Yeah, probably 3, 4, 5, probably like 6 guys I'd rather play ahead of Dylan Cease today, despite him being a very good pitcher.
Yeah, same.
Would you rather play Strowman or Cease?
Cease. Give me the ownership discount there. I still don't think Strowman should ever be like higher owned than Cease, like this much higher owned than Cease, even in a better matchup at similar price points. So I'll take the DFS talent here. Give me Cease. How about you?
Yeah, I'd probably just go for the ceiling play in a spot like this. Yeah. But again, I think I like five guys ahead of Strowman too. Like Gray, Hout, Bibee, Blanco. Might even put Kirby ahead of him.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
Single digit ownership on Kirby. I'm just a sucker when it comes to George Kirby, though, because of how good and efficient he is. Like a guy that is getting 28% strikeouts this season, but doesn't walk guys and doesn't give up power. You don't see that very often. You really don't, you know, it's just, it's not a common occurrence to get somebody like that, that is efficient, but also can give you the strikeouts. And to see that outside of those two starts, he's had 6, 7, 8, and 12 strikeouts. God, the matchup sucks, but 7,800 is a crazy price point. Like, there is no reason that George Kirby should be 7,800 in any matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about guys like Ryan Weathers and JP Sears, and I know that they're cheaper, but they're $1,500 cheaper. They're not $3,500 cheaper today. So, yeah, Kirby, you know, I rarely use pitchers against Houston, but this might be an exception.
Just wild that he's essentially the same price as Michael Lorenzen.
Yeah, that just should never be.
Right? Jeez. Anyway, any other pitcher spot? I think we've hit on a lot here. Any other spots you want to get to that we haven't talked about? I think we drilled into a lot of this. Like, you can't pay $9,100 for Brady Singer today. You just can't do it.
No.
Against Texas.
Yeah, and it's like, it's baseball. It's the old thing where the old adage or whatever, everyone's in play because anything can happen. But as far as realistic options go, you know, I almost think we're doing the viewers a disservice by keep talking about guys that we have no interest in playing, you know?
Pretty much. Yeah. I was just curious, is there anybody else that is even remotely viable? While you look, Jordan, go to the Sims pitcher exposure again. Actually, do me a favor. Go to the lineup generator. We can do both here. I just want to see if there's any guys that we're even getting trace amounts of, Matt, that might be like, you know, 10% of this guy. Oh, okay, he's fine because it's a positively leveraged spot, higher top pitcher probability than ownership, all of that. But my guess is the answer is going to be no.
Yeah, I mean, everyone else is getting scattered ownership, like just because they're on the slate, people multi-entering, but Charlie Morton, similarly discounted as George Kirby, but much tougher spot, and he's not as good as Kirby. So I just think that in every range where there's one of these guys we haven't talked about, there's at least one better option, you know?
Yeah, that's the problem. So yeah, look at the lineup generator, guys. Gray, Stroman, very similar to what we're getting in the Sims right now. Chris Pat, but like I've said many times, lineup generator, significantly cheaper if you ever want to jump in. I know a lot of you guys use the Sims. Jake, if you're in here, you know, he hit 17K after just grabbing it earlier in the week. DFS Golden was his name. He hit 14K 2 days after with the MLB Sims. So we're in business. And the tools 100% work. Links in the description in the chat for everything. By the way, if you're getting the Sims weekly, like Sims Max weekly or monthly, or even Sims Data, you're not just getting the Sims, but you're getting the top pitchers, top hitters tool, top stacks tool, ownership, player projections, lineup generators included in that, premium Discord, all of our tools, including the lineup simulator or the contest simulator, the post contest simulator, the late swap feature, which actually comes in handy even for baseball. All of that stuff is included across the board, every tool we have. So links down there. Like I said, if you ever have questions, my DMs are open. Greg always has his open. He's done the tutorials. He's great with this stuff. We can always help you out if you're curious, or just jump in Discord if you sign up. But yeah, with the lineup generator, you're getting in at a better price than any other tool in the industry. You're going to build better lineups than you've been building by hand. and you can swap players out, lock players, see how, you know, pop, how chalky a lineup is, how contrarian, what the optimal projection is. And here you can see it. Upload everything straight to CSV and see your exposure. So that's down there too, if you wanted to just do that. But we're not getting any shocking exposure. I mean, Paddock is the one spot, I think, Matt, where I go, man, he might be a little higher than I would love. If you scroll down, Jordan, are we getting any other pitchers, like any lower owned pitchers popping up? Because I didn't. You can go a little faster. JP Sears at 15%. All right, that's fine against the Marlins. 13%. Dylan Cease, that's fine. Right around the field. Only 10% Tanner Houck. There's 10% Kirby. I think, Matt, the one spot right now, and again, things can change, it's so early in the day, that surprises me a little is that we're just not getting a lot of Tanner Houck today. And it might just be an ownership thing.
Yeah, I think that's got to be what it is, because he's right now projected to be the second highest owned pitcher on the slate. Similar top pitcher percentages as guys like Blanco, Cease, Paddock, Bybee. So I understand why the Sims are pushing out those other guys a little bit more. That said, on paper, I think you could make a real case that Houck is the strongest one of those guys.
Yeah. Michael Thomas just missed the Hall of Fame. Shoot us the screenshot anyway, Michael, if you're rocking the avatar. You guys already know. Rock the stochastic avatar. Stochastic.com/avatar. Finish top three in a field of 5,000 or more. Any buy-in. Could be the nickel, quarter, doesn't matter. Get a free month of all the tools, $200 value. Just hit us up at Stochastic HOF. Say something nice, too. Or don't. Just tag us. Doesn't matter. One or the other. You want to talk about stacks here? I think we have covered everything for pitching.
Yeah, same. I'm sure we'll go over our top pitchers at the end.
We will. Let's go ahead and do this. So on a slate like this, where you have actually a good amount of good pitching, you also have a few guys that don't look great, but there are no totals. What if I told you that among all of these teams, looking at all of these implied totals, 18 teams, right? There is not a single total in the fives. I know that our tools are showing five. They have them up a little higher than I usually see it, like books. But even if you were to say five, there is not a single team that's just pulling away as like, wow, that is the greatest stack today. Look how flat top stack probability is in the top stack tool. You have eight teams, Matt, below 10% and above 6%.
Yeah, and to your point, like, I'm not seeing anything in the fives. The Braves are 4.5 juice to the over. So we've seen a bunch of these slates recently. I think it's kind of like, this is the slate where you see it kind of play out the most. A lot of these teams just look so, so similar. I mean, aside from the White Sox, the only team below a 2% chance of being a top stack, every single other team is between 3 and 9.5. So yeah, teams like the Angels, Detroit, the Marlins, they're not high. They're slightly under 4, but they're not that much lower than teams like the Cardinals, the Dodgers, the Mariners. So I don't think ownership's like an issue at all on slates like this, which makes them fun to play.
Yeah, it makes it very fun to play, but there's nothing really that jumps off the page.
Makes it fun to play, but hard to analyze because they all look
exactly
similar.
Like even Ronel Blanco, Seattle against Blanco, 6% top stack. Arizona against C, 6% top stack. You can't tell me that's not kind of crazy. Like Texas against Brady Singer, 9%. It's pretty wild. And I think one of the reasons, think about this for a second, Matt. One of the reasons is a lot of these bad pitchers are facing bad offenses. Like Ryan Weathers is going up against Oakland. JP Sears is going up against Miami in a bad park. Detroit has Stroman. White Sox against Sonny Gray. Minnesota against Houck, tough spot. Houston, good team. They should be good. George Kirby. Even Reese Olson's been, like, Reese Olson's been pretty decent. He's got the Yankees. It's pretty crazy. I will say the one spot that I'm looking at, and I feel like I really think this is going to change throughout the day. I want you to tell me if you think I'm just way off base here. Chad, I want you to tell me as well. Because tools update, we get more information. Sometimes early runs, we're just getting them out there so we can do these shows. I feel like Boston against Chris Paddock has to come up in the top stack probability, in the top stack column.
I kind of knew you were going to go there because I feel the exact same way. I'm just not really sure what the tools are seeing in Paddock that we're not. I think this might be one of those errors early in the day. Certainly willing to change my stance if they don't change. It would be highly unlikely I end up on Paddock. Maybe I'm not as high on Boston as I originally thought I might would be. But I'm with you. There are really only three pitchers on this slate that, you know, people have shown the propensity to want to pick on throughout this entire season. Weathers, J.P. Sears, and Chris Paddock. So I'm not really sure why Boston, who's clearly a much better offense than Oakland and Miami, doesn't have a top stack, a percentage that's higher. That said, looking at teams like Oakland and Miami, who are facing two of the worst pitchers, that's kind of a reason I like Weathers and Sears even more, specifically Weathers. As of this show, Oakland is the fourth highest owned team on the slate. Now, again, all this is jumbled. So they can end up being the 12th highest owned team. They could end up being the third highest owned. Either way, I think they're over-owned for a slate like this.
I agree. But this Boston thing just, you know what's crazy about Chris Paddock too? It's like he had that one really good start. And he got blown up in one start. The other three starts, he's just been below average, right? We can agree on that. But while his strikeout stuff for his career has never been bad, and I think that's what it comes down to, like 24% strikeout rate for his career. It's not bad. Clearly, it was better earlier in his career, and then he kind of just fell off a cliff and went to league average rates. But the guy allows 1.5 home runs per nine for his career, like 15% home run to fly ball rate for his career. If there was a spot where, all right, maybe Paddock goes out there, he goes five, he gives up two, he strikes out four, and then nobody wins, right? Like nobody on the Boston stacks, unless the bullpen implodes, wins. No one wins with Paddock there either, because I can't imagine you're optimal with that. Even if you get to win, it doesn't look that good. But there's also a possibility that he coughs up multiple home runs and gets tagged pretty bad today. It's not bad hitting
weather. The truth of the matter is your first way it played out is how most games play out. So 100%, 100%. You know what I mean? Like that is how it's likely to play out, but I'm with you. I think that there's way more variance in Paddock and high variance in the Red Sox than we're showing here. Go ahead.
No, I'm with you 100%. Yeah. The reason we're not picking on Corbin, by the way, St. Louis, right? He's not on the slate. I assume that's like one of the 6 p.m. games.
Yeah, there's like a bunch of 6:40 games today, I think.
So there's the Chicago Wrigley game at 2 or whatever. And then I think there's 5 games in that 6 o'clock spot.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, yeah, Michael said, I like going against Sears today. Yeah, it'd be so much nicer if it was at a decent ballpark.
Yeah, there's no way for me that I'm going to be high on a team like Miami on a slate like this. I don't think Sears is particularly good, but Miami's worse than he is. And there's just so many better offenses on this slate that, while they're not in as good of a spot on paper because the pitcher they're facing isn't as weak as Sears, their upside is just so much inherently higher because of the bats they have. I like Oakland more than I like Miami in that same park if forced to choose. Both of them look so similar to me, though. I just don't have much interest in either.
I would just be very, very very inclined to get the leverage play with Boston against Paddock if he's really going to be like the sixth highest owned pitcher, fifth highest owned pitcher on the slate.
I hate when people say this because they say it a lot and I don't think there's much merit to it. You know, people will say, how often on main slates like this, the teams in Oakland or San Francisco end up shipping? That's a reason people use to not play those teams. And while I don't buy into that too much, on a slate like this, where the teams are Miami and Oakland, I'm buying it.
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Low total. What's it like a 7.5 total in that game?
Yeah, like eight juice for the under, 7.5. I mean,
yeah, seven. I'm seeing 7.5. Yeah, -118 over. Either way, 7.5, 8. It's just all around ugly because you don't love those pitchers. And you really don't love those stacks.
You're really just playing against one of those pitchers being dog shit. And it could easily happen. I mean, these guys aren't great, but you need home runs to win slates like this. This isn't a 15-game slate, but it's still a big enough slate where you're going to need home runs. And neither of these teams really hit home runs.
Exactly. The nice thing is when you look at this stuff early in the day, you can get some good opportunities in other spots. DraftKings Pick 6 is one of them. You guys are already on DraftKings, so it's not like this is an ad read where, you know, anything. But they have static props. So, like, they don't move throughout the day. And you're, unlike the other pick'em sites, you're playing against the field, right? Like, your competition is other people. I've seen so – I don't have it in PA yet. I've heard some rumors that it could be coming here, which is actually very exciting. But I've seen people just crushing, like smarter people crushing with DraftKings Pick 6 because there's edges there. Also, I know it hasn't been skewed as much towards people taking overs as lowers, but there's still more people always going to take overs. And the fact that these lines don't move throughout the day and they stay where they were when they were released is still this early in the game, this early since it's been released, still a really significant edge. So yeah, it's a cool format. And thank God you had one place out there that instead of doing the exact same cookie cutter pick'em format, decided, you know what, we're gonna actually do something different and gamify it even more to the point where you're playing against other people. Very cool stuff, but might get some opportunities on this baseball slate today when it comes to DraftKings Pick 6. I'll tell you this much though. I don't know where the best stacking opportunities are outside of that. Like Atlanta and San Diego are the 2-1 and 2 top stack probability, the two teams with the highest top stack potential. San Diego, much better value, getting a little bit more ownership. Both of them slightly leveraged positively. I don't know where else I can be. Like, do you see any, not leverage, but like any contrarian spots where you go, you know what? I kind of want to target that today.
So no, Atlanta is the one team that's like coming in, quote unquote, under-owned. I don't really see a ton of leverage there. I just don't think that people are going to want to sell their souls to get up to Atlanta, considering how expensive they are and how pedestrian they've been. They're my favorite stack on the board. But when I think about your question and I think about like the leverage opportunities, I do think it comes from teams like Boston, if Paddock's actually going to get love. There aren't many because the other pitchers are mostly facing bad teams. Seattle, I like, especially if Blanco gets a little bit more love than we expect. Certainly there's leverage in Minnesota, the Angels, Detroit, and the White Sox. Not really interested in any of those teams. I think certainly Minnesota would be the one you could make a case for. I just don't think their offense is particularly good, certainly without Buxton. And I'm very high on Houck. So as far as true leverage spots go, the only two for me that I could see prioritizing because of the leverage is Boston and Seattle. Two stacks I kind of like anyways.
Yeah, I get it. You know, I'm looking at the stack score from DraftKings to FanDuel. And on DraftKings, the stack score up top, so the top stacks tool, has San Diego, Seattle, St. Louis, Oakland even, for the obvious reasons, and Texas. Boston's down there in the middle. on FanDuel, and Jordan, you can flip over to FanDuel. The highest stack score is St. Louis against Brad Keller today. Then San Diego, Texas, Seattle. So everything's pretty similar there. What do you think about that? Where St. Louis, it's an aging lineup in large part when you're looking at, you know, a lot of guys who were their best hitters. The one thing that just drives me up a wall when it comes to a guy like Brad Keller is he's never going to get strikeouts. His walk rate this season, how many games has he started?
None. He was at AAA.
So he's only pitched one game?
Yeah, recent. It was recent too.
Was that a start or a bullpen game?
He came in. I think it was a start Garrett Crochet made, and he came in after that.
Yeah, he came in out of the bullpen. Okay, so the more I look at it, this actually does make a lot of sense. Brad Keller doesn't give up home runs, first of all. Like, the guy, phenomenal at limiting power. But how many pitches do we really expect him to throw before you start digging into that White Sox bullpen?
Yeah, and that's a huge question here, because I think St. Louis is probably the most overowned team on the slate on both sites. Certainly FanDuel, where they're getting a ton of love because of their price tags. Even on DK, though, it's risky, though, because of what you just said. Like, I don't even think it's Keller is that bad. I don't think he's particularly good.
He's not a bad pitcher.
No, he's not bad at all. He's just kind of middling. But the bullpen is really, really bad here. I still think, though, that St. Louis is drastically overowned for who they are, the spot they're in. On this slate, St. Louis looks like Miami and Oakland to me personally.
It's just a weird spot because the White Sox have the highest xFIP in the league among relief pitchers. So it's like, what happens if Brad Keller throws 50 pitches? But no, he won't, because he threw...
Was he starting at AAA? That's the other thing I wanted to see.
They were trying to tune him up because, like, the reason this isn't pointless. There's a point to this. If in AAA he was actually going out there and making starts and building it up, then I would be very uninterested in St. Louis at that ownership today. If this is something where he still has to get built up, can you pull that up?
Yeah, I'm trying to right now.
If this is something where, like, he still has to get built up and he's throwing 50 pitches, which means he goes, three innings, and then you've got six innings from the bullpen, that to me would look a lot different than if Brad Keller can come out and throw five or six innings. If Keller can come out and throw five or six innings, a guy that really limits power and has a career ground ball rate way higher than the league average against a St. Louis offense that's not particularly good, I would be right there with you saying this is easily the most overowned stack on the slate.
I'm seeing he's thrown 16 innings in the minors this year. Has not been good. And I'm just trying to find the breakdown, but I can't right now. So I'm working on it.
Yeah. Yes, Michael, the Sixers did play their asses off, but Knicks are a great basketball team. What a fun – look. As a Sixers fan, you learn to expect this stuff, usually in the second round. But it was an amazing series.
One of the best first round series you'll ever see, I think.
It was amazing. Every single game, it came down to the final minute. How can you beat that? I'd love to have Paul George, Michael. I would take Siakam too. Just get Tobias Harris out of here. Fucking guy attempted two shots. It was just a ghost.
Yeah, he stinks. So back to Keller, though, because I pulled it up. Again, he hasn't been good, but he started on the 23rd of April. He went 5 2/3, faced 24 batters. Doesn't show his pitch count, but, I mean, I would assume that it was decently high.
24 batters is a decent amount.
Yeah, and then the start before that, a week before that, he faced 23 batters, went 5 1/3. Again, wasn't good, but... you got to kind of take that with a grain of salt when these guys are making, you know, rehab appearances or whatever it might have been. Again, he's not great, but I do think that he's probably stretched out here to be an actual starter.
I agree. Yep. I would say the same. He went 1 2/3 scoreless, no hits, 2 walks, a strikeout against Minnesota out of the bullpen. I think we're on the same page. It just makes St. Louis look worse. I'm telling you, man, I know. If I told you we don't think Keller throws more than 45, 50 pitches and you get most of this game from the bullpen, wouldn't you look at this a lot differently?
Definitely, because no matter how good or bad Keller is, their bullpen is significantly terrible. Worse. And I know that, again, I said this before we started talking about stacks, ownership doesn't really matter on slates like this. I still don't want to go to a relatively high-owned Cardinals team in a spot the field thinks is much better than it actually is. That makes
especially
sense.
Especially when no other teams are actually high-owned.
Right. Like, why? Like, St. Louis stinks. I know it doesn't matter for tonight, but they do.
Favorite pitchers?
Favorite pitcher's got to be Sonny Gray, Tanner Houck. And I'll say Kirby, man. I just think that price really stands out. I
love it. That'll be your contrarian play.
Mm-hmm.
Mine too. Yeah, Gray. Man, Bibee is so negatively leveraged. That's surprising to me.
Gray, same. Houck.
Go ahead.
I'm shocked that Stroman has a higher top two pitcher percentage than Bibee, yeah. But that's just me.
I like Bibee. I like Houck. I like Gray. I like Blanco here, honestly. We didn't talk a lot about him, but that's a high upside spot against Seattle.
Insert pitcher against Seattle. I think that's all that needs to be said.
Pretty much. Kirby. If we had to go with a cheap guy, I think Weathers would probably be my cheapest option, especially given that Paddock ownership right now.
Yeah, so I don't like Cedars or Weathers, but they're wildly in play for me because I don't think they're bad and they're so cheap.
Agreed. As far as stacks go, I like Boston today. I like Boston. I like them. I like them more than St. Louis. Probably Boston, yes, San Diego, and Atlanta being my three.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say the same three, just in a little bit of different order. I'm going to say Atlanta, Boston, San Diego in that order.
Oh, Michael Thomas. Back to my underdog drafts. I can't wait, dude. I haven't done them yet. I haven't had time. I can't wait to dive into that shit. Cannot wait. Yeah, it's going to be good stuff. Anyway. Appreciate you guys hanging out as always. Follow Matt at FantasyTisMatt on Twitter. Me at Lafay _D. Shout out to Jordan Klein, as always, for producing this one. We'll have Live Before Lock tonight. We'll have Live Before Lock for basketball as well. And then catch everything on playback. It's totally free if you're not there. Hanging out afterwards. Jordan tells me, I don't know if any of you guys were there yesterday, but Jordan tells me things got out of control with Eitan Chander and Eric Lindquist yesterday on the playback show during that Sixers-Knicks game. So, yeah. Good stuff. We'll see you back there tonight. Thanks for watching, as always. Have a great rest of the day. Great weekend, too, if I don't see you guys. Don't think I will. And I'll see you back here on Monday. Peace.